Welcome to episode 75 of the Mommy Beta Podcast. We are four new mommies beta testing parenthood, and today we're going to talk about VBACs versus C-section, feeding your children organic food, and how to survive the holidays preemptively. So with me on the line is Jennifer. I am Natalie Morris. So we are one half of the Mommy Beta bloggers. We blog at mommybeta.com. And on this podcast, we talk about things that we've been writing about. Jennifer is pregnant. I am not. I already have two and I'm done. So Jennifer, how are you feeling?
Feeling good. Just hungry.
Yeah. We were just talking about how hungry we both are because I'm nursing and she's hungry. So there's a lot of food going through the two of us.
Yeah, I've been trying to be better. I wrote early on in the pregnancy about trying to be better about my weight gain this time around. And I feel like I have been. But with my increased workouts, I'm so much hungrier, I feel, than I was last time. But oh, that was a long time ago. Did you notice this at all when you were working out more that you were just more ravished?
No, I was really good about eating pretty consistently. Like I would eat a good meal and then, oh, there's the baby monitor. I would eat a good meal and then I would, you know, have a snack of like some apples or some nuts. So I was just constantly eating. I didn't eat a ton, but I ate a lot often.
Yeah, I guess the words of wisdom are do not go to Costco, especially during Halloween season when they have bags of Halloween candy. The size that your baby would be, and don't buy huge cupcakes from there either.
Yeah, that's good because you want to be able to get that baby out of you, which is what you were blogging about whether or not you want to have a VBAC, which stands for vaginal birth after C-section, or just go the straight C-section route. Now, you and Natalie and Alex, you all had C-sections for the first round, and Natalie and Alex both have chosen to do C-sections scheduled for the second round. And you're on the fence about whether or not to ask for a VBAC or to get that C-section. I would think this is a really tough call. And you're how many weeks in now and still haven't made the decision?
28 weeks tomorrow, which is Friday, and that would be my third trimester. And I actually met with my OB this past week, and actually, at my first prenatal visit, right when I found out I was pregnant, I was about 8 weeks or whatever, I had this discussion with the midwife that I first met with, and I didn't even bring up the topic. She brought it up of, let's talk about your former birth. What are you thinking this time? She's very pro VBAC. The doctor's office that I'm going to, or the group that I'm going to, are very pro VBAC, but they're not pushy about it. Mm-hmm. And they've had a lot of successful VBACs. And so I was initially thinking, okay, well, let's just, I did it C-section first time around. I'll just do C-section the second time around. But as I heard more and started thinking about how my daughter would feel after having the baby, I was trying to figure out what would be best for all of us. And that's the hard thing because the best thing probably for mommy, for me, and for the baby of not putting either of us at risk is to do the C-section. There are risks involved with that, though. But there, it seems as though like a uterine rupture is more risky than a risk from the C-section, in mm-hmm. my mind, because I had a great C-section the first time around. I had a really good recovery, even though I had labored already for 24 or 25 hours. And in the discussion with my OB this past week, she had said, well, you know, the second time around is even easier. Not that she's pushing it, but that you're not laboring for that long. Your body's not exhausted. It hasn't gone through this other process, and then you go this other route. And you've had a full night's sleep. You get the 5 days in the hospital and all of that.
Right. Yeah.
But the risk of the uterine rupture, she had said, was 1 in 200, whereas I found online, it's 1 in 500. Mm-hmm. So that scares me because it causes the placenta to separate from the wall, which, you know, is how the baby gets oxygen. Right. And so you can cause the baby to have brain damage.
Yeah. And how much of this, because I know my sister-in-law has requested a VBAC and I was asking my mother-in-law, can she change her mind at any given time? Like if you get in the 38th week and you're like, I just want to do this, can you do that?
Yes. You can. And actually, they are encouraging me not to make a decision until I get much closer. And we had talked yesterday about, you know, waiting probably at least until a month because there are other factors involved, like the position of the baby. If the baby's breech, they're not going to turn that baby. I've already had a C-section. They're going to do a section. If the baby looks like it's measuring as big as Elle was, which right. was around close to 9 pounds, then we're probably going to do a C-section, or we definitely will do a C-section. So there are other factors that may make the decision for me. It's just the birth that I had before isn't necessarily indicative that I need to have a C-section again. I might be able to do it the other way. And the first midwife that I'd met with said, well, you know, I'd probably say, you know, you have a 70% chance of having a vaginal birth. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about the birthing process for you, Nat, because you've mentioned a couple times about the sledgehammer hitting your private parts, but everything goes back to where it was, and you don't seem to have any incontinence problems, you know, or tearing or anything like that. And I've heard problems like that from other moms, that it was just very traumatic to them down there.
Yeah, well, I did have a few stitches, but I was always really good about my Kegel exercises. And so when I went back for my checkup after having my second, they said, wow, your Kegel is really good. It's as if you didn't have any babies. So I kept up on that. So I don't know how much that plays into it. It probably does. And like I said, it felt to me like everything was so swollen from such trauma that it didn't feel like it. What is that awful saying that men say, like a hot dog down a hallway or something like that?
Yeah.
It didn't feel like I was cavernous like that. It felt like, oh my gosh, I can't open this up again to that. I've talked many times about how I was so afraid of postpartum sex because of that. So I didn't feel like it was just like, oh, I'm, you know, anything can come through here now. And so I don't know what other people say. And I've heard other people say, like, oh, I've had a C-section, I'll just protect my vagina. It hasn't been traumatized. And I'm like, okay, well, my vagina's not that traumatized.
So. You're a lucky one. Yeah, and so I'm just a little concerned about that. I mean, I am concerned about that. It's a big concern. My main reason to want to do this is, you know, it could potentially be healthier for the baby if everything goes as planned, because that's the way they're supposed to go out. And then the other thing is with Elle, I want the transition to be as easy for her. And I wouldn't be able to pick her up for 6 weeks. And she loves me to pick her up and hold her. Mm-hmm. I know I could pick her up when I'm sitting on the floor and put her on my lap, but I know that she's going to miss that. And it might have some effect on that. Did you have to pick up Miles a lot?
I did. I don't remember picking him up quite as much, but I mean, there's no issue. If I've had it with a vaginal birth, it's not hard, you know? Like, I wasn't really sore anywhere else but my private parts. So you can certainly pick up a baby if you just have kind of I mean, I had a lot of bleeding, I guess. So, you know, if I picked him up, I would have bleeding as well.
But do you think that would have had an effect on him, or he would have noticed, you know, if you weren't able to pick him up for 6 weeks?
Probably. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Because he likes to, you know, he's very independent, but he still will come around when he needs some loving and go, Mommy, you pick me up? Or, Mommy, you take me? So, it would really break my heart to have to tell him no. But Natalie did it, so maybe we'll talk to her about how that was on Dominic.
Yeah, I've been meaning to ask her about that. And I'm also curious about your recovery time, because the nice thing about a C-section is you do get that time in the hospital to rest up. Do you feel like when you come home, I know it was her first experience was the same way, that you're just sort of rushed into, okay, here's your baby, see you later.
I wanted to get out of there both times.
You wanted to go home.
Yeah, who wants to stay in a hospital? It's not fun.
Hey, the place I was at had awesome food. The last night they gave you filet mignon and champagne dinner toast for you and your husband. I mean, and you know, you could send your baby to the nursery if you wanted to. We didn't really do it, but it's just nice to know that you're in a place that it's kind of pampering you, and it's not like back in the real world yet.
I guess I've heard people say that. I wanted to leave. I was ready. And you know, I wanted to walk around a little. I wanted to take my baby out. I didn't love the idea of, you know, my baby just living all of its 2 days of life inside a hospital. I wanted to get some fresh air. And I was a bit more impatient than that, I guess.
Well, I think this time's going to be different with knowing Elle's at home than I'm going to want to get home.
You should see the video of when Miles comes running in and he meets Ava for the first time. And I am a complete mess. I'm waterworks. And I, you know, didn't see that coming. And I was just holding the both of them like, My babies. So
I can totally see that coming. I'm waiting for that look in Elle's face. Like, what? You were serious? There really is a baby?
Right. And the first time I nursed him, I put the nursing cover or nursed in front of him. We were at a restaurant on the day we brought her home. And I put the nursing cover on and he goes, no, mommy, no blanket. And he lifted off like, get that off you. What are you doing? Like, don't be hugging on her. You're mine.
That's so cute. Yeah. So I'm having a really hard time with this, but I know I have more time to think about it. So that's helpful. But yeah, you don't know what you would do if you were in this situation.
I really don't. No. Mm. But I think I probably would put as much thought into it as you did and probably agonize over it a bit.
Yeah, I am. And the other thing that's making it hard for me is I like things to happen when they're supposed to happen. And I don't like being in charge of my baby's birthday, which is really weird. I know I'm kind of nutso, but I'd rather him make his decision on like, this is my day. This is the day I come, as opposed to me saying, okay, you know what? You're going to come on X day.
Yeah, I get you there, but I had my water broken both times. So I kind of made that decision. I was induced. So it's the same thing, you know, just like my cervix was ready, but the water didn't break. So we're like, let's just get this party started. And it was a party, let me tell you.
They always are.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well,
I'll keep you posted.
Okay, let us know how you decide on that one. Let's talk about feeding your baby organic produce, because there's a new article in the Wall Street Journal that came out that talks about a report from the American Academy of Pediatrics that was published this week that says that it's another one of those articles that says organic food may not be worth it because of the health benefits. And this is the kind of study that really gets under my skin, because I am not under the illusion that the food that I'm feeding my child that's organic is more healthier or more dense in nutrients than non-organic food. The reason I choose this is because I want to avoid pesticides and hormones. But still, the American Academy of Pediatrics is stopping short of recommending this, and even saying organic milk may not be worth it because of the health benefits are not really provable. What do you think of this?
I agree. When I first heard of the story, I was livid, because people that I know actually came up to me with an argument of just when we started talking about organic produce. Well, you know, they just came out that it's actually not better for you. It's like, well, actually it is better for you. It's just the nutritional value, as you just said, isn't any different. And that's not what we were worried about. I mean, and they also say in this article, which is shocking to me, that pediatricians would recommend, that you not give your kids organic because it's not better for them. But then on the other side, on the same hand, they're saying that kids' nervous systems are developing and exposure to toxins have different and much more profound effects on them. And just eliminating or substituting conventional produce with organic eliminated chemicals found in their urine
within 5 days. That's crazy. So think about what's coursing through your body if you're not eating organics, and then to assert that it's probably no big deal, we don't know, to me is just not responsible.
Right. And I get that people don't have access to organic produce. My family in Arkansas doesn't really have access unless they drive an hour and a half away, which is not realistic. And I get that it's more expensive. So you can choose wisely on which ones, you know, seem to have more pesticides or not when you're buying organic. They just don't want people not to buy produce. And I get that. They want children to have more fruits and veggies than crackers a day.
Right. But, you know, I've done a lot of studying about food culture. I had projects in graduate school about our system of food delivery in this country. And I would assert that organic food is not necessarily more expensive, but that is the cost. That's the real cost. And by using pesticides and shipping, you know, farther than this food is meant to be shipped, and all of these kind of non-sustainable farming methods, we're able to cheapen the food. So we think that food should cost, you know, X amount because that's what the local Kroger's is able to discount it to. That's not really the cost of food, though. And when you really grow something with sustainable methods, that's, you know, what this food costs. That's why it costs more. And in this country, we spend the smallest percent of our income on food, whereas it's something, it hovers around like between 9% and 14%. And in France, it's like 17, 19, close to 20%. And in Europe and other places, they don't expect food to be our cheapest expense. And I think that's what really gets under my skin when people have this idea that food should be cheap, because this is the food, the fuel that you're setting your kids up to with success. So we have to make the best choices possible. I really, really believe that. And I think you pinned something on Pinterest that really motivated me a couple of months ago that said food can either be your best medicine or the slowest poison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I had this discussion with my husband because we're frugal. We like to buy things at the best cost we can. But as people say, you know, the things you're doing now could cost you a lot more in the long run. So I actually got rid of my old SodaStream and I got a new one that has the glass bottles. Because I'm drinking this 10, 20 times a day, you know, out of these bottles. And I was just like, you know what? I didn't make the right decision the first time around. I want this one. And he's like, fine, you know what? Money doesn't grow on trees. And I said, well, you could be paying a doctor bills later.
Right.
And that's exactly what it equates to. But I do think that your point of this is what it costs to grow food. I mean, McDonald's has cheapened our thought, like has made us think that food is just, it shouldn't cost anything. Oh, the dollar menu. Well, the dollar menu will kill you faster than anything I know.
Yeah, yeah. And there is an article in the New York Times not too, too long ago about how when you buy the cheaper item, most of the time you end up spending more on it, whether it be a bicycle or a soda stream or, you know, milk or whatever, because you're, you know, because it doesn't last, the quality is not as good, you end up later buying the thing you really wanted. So, you know, and a lot of times, and I think I've been thinking about this a lot because of the election time and our dependence on China. And, you know, you get so many baby goods and baby gifts that are made in China. You think, oh, all this cheap stuff that's made overseas, I'm not really supporting the local economy. And, you know, I think that the attitude that things should be cheap so that we have a lot of them is really detrimental to our country.
I agree with that. I mean, I think it goes back to cloth diapers and you using those, but environmental practices. I mean, some people eat organic because of how it affects our earth, you know, and how it affects the growing regions around us and the water that we drink.
Right. And, you know, I'm a believer in buying things that are quality, but having fewer things. And that's sort of always been my philosophy. And that's how I feel about food too. Like I don't need, you know, to buy 2-for-1 bags of Doritos because they're a dollar or whatever. You know, it's just, that's not the food that's going to set my family up for success. And I'm a big believer about that. And I know that makes me earthy and crunchy, but you know what? I have to do whatever it takes to give these kids all the chances that they can have to succeed in life. And, you know, chocolate milk and cheap crackers is not it.
Right. Yeah.
And not that I have anything against chocolate milk, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Non-organic.
Elle has not had her chocolate milk yet. Has not had chocolate milk.
You know, so. At Miles' birthday party, I went to Costco and I bought all those little Horizon organic milks, and they only had it in chocolate in that size. And so I was like, well, I kind of have to, you know, it's my only choice. So I served it and Miles was like, what the heck is this?
You're like, it's a birthday party drink only on birthdays.
Exactly. But well, I refused to serve soda. I just wouldn't buy it for a party.
Served lemonade, and I thought that parents might have a problem with that. But we made the lemonade ourselves so we could control some of the sugar content. But
right.
It's a birthday party. What are you going to do? Those Horizon milks freak me out. Are those the kind that you sit on the shelf that aren't refrigerated, or are these the refrigerated?
They're not refrigerated. Yeah.
How is that possible?
You know what? I'm not sure. And I just started buying these boxed heavy cream things at Whole Foods that also doesn't need to be refrigerated. I really don't know. I don't know. Maybe one of our listeners can tell us what this is about, because maybe there's a whole technology that, you know, cream and milk products don't actually need the refrigeration that we think that they do.
Well, I do represent a butter company, but I know that they say that butter or dairy needs to be refrigerated, but I know they do make powdered milk products too.
Yeah.
But I don't know how that plays into it.
I don't know, but that boxed cream stuff is pretty awesome because it doesn't run out as fast as the refrigerated stuff. So I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, let us know.
It's at Trader Joe's, so you know that you can have some kind of confidence that it's a bit safer than most places. But I don't know.
Yeah, it can't be too bad. Well, you know, the thing about the milk that gets me is that they're saying that there's no evidence that, you know, estrogen-treated cows are just as safe or not as safe. And it's like, okay, well, there's no evidence. Then why, you know, we're talking about the antibiotics and all the other things they're putting in here. And there was this big hubbub years ago about how these hormones are sending our kids into puberty earlier.
Right. Right. And then there's this recent piece from the Wall Street Journal talking about how boys are starting puberty earlier already, and they really can't figure out why. They think maybe it has to do with the hormones in our food, but they don't know. It says now, you know, the trend is most pronounced in African-American boys who are starting to show signs of puberty by age 9, which is crazy town. They're still little boys at 9.
Yeah.
So anyway,
does that scare you with Miles?
Yeah, of course it does. It scares me with Ava, you know, to think about like getting her abroad 8 or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. It's just we just have to do the best we can to make the best choices that we can. And I'll get off my high horse about that. I've been thinking about just gender and politics a lot lately because it's election season and I'm getting all worked up. And I was thinking about maybe writing this post about how for some reason politicians seem to want to tell us whether or not what to do with our bodies as women. But I figured I just should not go there.
I'd be interested to see that post. Post it. Let's see what our readers have to say.
Somebody stop me. Okay. Let's talk about the last thing. Speaking of stop me, the last post that we wanted to talk about today was something I wrote. I saw this in a magazine recently and I thought, what a great idea. And it's create a to don't list instead of a to do list, because you know that you can get crazy when the holidays come. And now, you know, it's Ava's first Christmas and our first Christmas as a family. I'm like, oh, I'll make 70 different types of cookies and I'll knit, you know, all of these different things. And then I'm like, I will hate myself by the end of the holiday. So I made a to don't list, things that I will not volunteer myself to do. So I just make it a point not to take on extra stuff. What do you think of this?
I loved this. I thought it was a great idea. I don't know if I'd be so good at doing it. I'm not very good at even making my to-do list. I felt so responsible when I did the other day. When I saw it, I thought of you yesterday when I was in Michael's because they had chargers there. And one of your to-don'ts is don't stress about your table settings for Thanksgiving that you're hosting at your house, which is a big affair. And I thought, they're only $1.99. Maybe I should buy them. And then I'm like, well, think of these VOCs that are coming off the plates. That's me, insanity talking.
Right.
But I definitely need to do this because I was looking around and I was talking to Alex, who's doing this great project of where she's helping this organization gives gifts to families every year. The Needy Families Make List, and people volunteer to provide supplies for those lists. And I thought, that's a really great thing to do. Maybe I should do something like that. And then I started thinking with Blacklist, which is my company that I'm working on, Mommy Beta, my PR consulting work, Elle and the baby on the way, and the nursery that we're working on. There's no way I can do that, even though I really want to help out. So I'm going to have to probably put something like that on my to-don't list, but it doesn't mean I can't, you know, donate.
Give in other ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I learned this lesson the hard way yesterday because I was just drowning. I have had a change in jobs lately. I've had my kids have been sick twice. Clayton and I got the stomach flu and I started business school and I just couldn't handle my coursework. And I had not made even one assignment on time for this one class. And the professors were so great about it. But I was like, this is really embarrassing me. And I'm not learning it. I'm just trying to skate by and barely do these assignments, not well, but just doing them. So I had to ask for an incomplete and I'll take that course again later. And I had to just say, okay, I can't take on all of this. I have to tell myself no. So that I had vowed to myself that I wouldn't let my goals affect my children. And so Clayton's like, well, just put her in the, you know, exerciser and do your study. And I'm like, well, no, that's not how I want to be a mother. So, I had to drop one class. And so it takes me longer to finish. Who cares? You know? So I have to make sure that I don't register for too many classes. I don't volunteer for everything that, you know, Miles Daycare wants to. They want to make Halloween cupcakes and then Thanksgiving and then Christmas cookies. You know, just take on one or two, but not all of it. Don't try and knit anything that, you know, my children need, because then when it gets cold and I have not finished those mittens, I'll feel like a jerk. you know, just take it easy and enjoy your family and your holidays.
I would agree with that. And I also, I was talking to Nellie Gaffori about this yesterday when you talk about, you know, wanting the mother you want to be. And it's taken me almost 2 years into Elle's life to realize the kind of mom I want to be. And lately I've just been trying to be more in the present and not waking up and thinking, oh, I need to send out tweets for this company and I have to write this press release and now here's your breakfast and then I got to think about this that I have to do, because it doesn't make me happy. It doesn't make me feel like a good mom or a good person, and it doesn't make her happy either. But I've realized whenever I just kind of, you know, make her the priority and push these things aside. And I know we can't always do that, but you cutting back on a course where you really want to benefit from that course anyway, and you want to learn, and it's not making you feel good as a mom or a person or an achiever if you're just running around and doing all this stuff. So I've just really come to the realization now that I have a baby pending that I really just need to be present in my life and not take on these other things. So the not to-do list probably be something for me all year long.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a good policy, not just during the holidays, but all year round. Well, my little one's up, so I have to go. We usually wrap up our show with a little victory. We didn't discuss this in advance. Do you want to share one?
Ah, that's a tough one.
I have one if you don't.
Go ahead.
Okay. So I've been trying to practice emotion coaching lately. And that comes from one of my books that I talked about in my Mommy Beta book club, which you can find on the site. And it talks about helping your children to identify how they're feeling so that then they can work through them in a better way. And Miles was really upset about something. Either he wanted something that I wasn't going to give him, or he wanted to go someplace that we couldn't go. And I said, no, you know, you wait there for mommy. I'm going to go get your coat. We have to do this instead. And so I was walking up the stairs, and behind me, he yelled, "I'm really mad." And I was so proud of him, because I've been trying to identify his emotions with him. And I think that once he can learn to say how he feels, he can deal with that a bit better rather than expressing himself physically. So, you know, usually that's not a good thing when your child tells you you're mad, but I was really upset about it. And then I was really happy about it. And then a day or two later, he wanted some crackers and it was dinner time. And I was like, no, we can't have that. And he goes, "That makes me sad." So I just feel like my emotion coaching is starting to work, and that made me feel good.
That is really big. I love that
too. Yeah.
So are you just saying, how are you teaching the emotions?
Well, when he has a display of something, you know, he wants to throw something or whatever, and I say, oh, you threw that because you're really upset about it, or you're mad, right? You're mad. Okay. And then I talk about, like, it's okay to be mad. Sometimes we feel like this and, you know, we should talk about it. And so he's learning to say, like, I'm really mad, or, you know, that makes me sad, or something like, or he'll say, I'm so excited for this thing. So, you know, hopefully eventually he learns how to express himself beyond just naming the feeling, but, you know, dealing with it and realizing that sadness is not forever, and being mad is not forever either, because sometimes in their head they think, wow, I'm so mad, this is how I am. But it's good to give them perspective, and like, being mad is a temporary state. Feeling. Yeah, state. Mm-hmm. Right.
I love that. I'm totally going to work on that with Elle, because she's definitely not telling me she's mad. She's like, ah! Then two seconds later, it's like, oh, look, there's a kitty. I'm fine now. But it would be nice for her to say that, right? You know, even though,
yeah,
to so know that she's feeling that way.
That's my little victory. Hopefully it continues. So,
she does show a little empathy, though, that which makes me happy. Like, she'll watch, say, if there's YoGabba on and there's a little animal on there and he's sad or something, she'll go, oh, mommy, he's sad. You know, aww. So she's recognizing that emotion. So I guess that's the first step. And then the next is getting her to recognize when she's feeling that way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah, it's good just to teach them what those emotions are. So that's also another victory. Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, I got to go. I see my little girl looking at me on the monitor. So have a wonderful day. Thank you so much for listening to the Mommy Beta Podcast, episode 75. We'll see you next week for episode 76. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.